His Holiness Bhaktisarya Swami Maharaj is a disciple, very senior disciple of our ISKCON founder Acharya. His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Since 1975, if I'm correct, Maharaj has been in this movement as a renunciant Vaishnava monk for so many years. He's also a governing body commissioner for ISKCON, means he's one of the spiritual leaders of our society, and also an initiating spiritual master and a spiritual guide for so many people. Maharaj is also a very renowned scholar in Eastern thought and philosophy, and he represents ISKCON society at the United Nations on a regular basis. Engaging people from other religious traditions and scholars in interfaith dialogues and other kinds of discussions about world peace and so on. He's currently based in Ujjain, India. Some of you may know Ujjain. It's in central India. It's a very ancient and sacred city in India. It's known for, in ancient days, for astronomical and mathematical research. I googled on the Wikipedia, that's what I found out. But Maharaj is based there, and he's been developing many educational projects, reaching out to the college students and intellectuals in Ujjain, and also developing many social projects such as a Food for Life, really taking spirituality to the neediest sections of the society. And with the underlying goal of developing very wonderful spiritual communities in Ujjain and places around the world wherever he visits on a regular basis. So once again, I think it's a very great fortune for all of us here in Boston. I'm speaking on behalf of Dara Prabhu, his voice is not so good, but his heart is blossoming. I know that. So all of us are very happy. Maharaj, thank you so much. We are really looking forward to hearing from you this is tonight. Thank you.
Just a very quick program note. So Maharaj will speak until around 8:30. And then at 8:30 we have the RT, the last RT of the day, which is a 15-minute RT. Hopefully Maharaj will lead that kirtan for us, and then we'll have prasadam, okay? So thank you so much for your patience. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. And thank you very much, Lord Vishnu Prabhu, for creating this wonderful opportunity to get to know so many wonderful devotees here. Actually, I was trying to recall when I came to Boston last. And I couldn't quite remember exactly when it was. It's probably about 25 years ago. And at the same time, I also remember the first time I came to Boston. That I remember very, very vividly. And when I was standing in front of the deities today, it seemed that all those memories were coming back. First time I came to Boston was in 79. That was my first visit to America. I joined ISKCON in 76, not 75. And I joined in 76, and I came to America for the first time in 79. Actually, after I joined ISKCON, I was very afraid of coming to the West. I was in the West. I was in Europe. And then I went back to India with a very strong resolve to take to spiritual life. That was in 75, and I thought that when I go back to India, I'll find a guru and everything will be easy. But unfortunately, when I went back to India, I found that it was extremely difficult to find a guru. I was searching for a guru, and for about a year, I had been searching in vain. There were so many so-called holy people, but I couldn't find a single one to whom I could surrender myself to. And the interesting thing was that although I came across ISKCON in 1970 in Germany, and I used to visit ISKCON Temple, and ISKCON Temple, I'm from Calcutta, and ISKCON Temple in Calcutta was not too far away from my home, and but it never occurred to me to go to ISKCON and find out. I was searching around all over India for a guru. And then finally, when I practically gave up my search, and I gave up my search thinking that I don't have a guru. And at the back of my mind, I had a kind of a feeling of disappointment and a thought that if at all I have a guru, then let him come and pick me up. And with that thought, I gave up my search. And then it happened. One day, I got a book called The Nectar of Devotion. And as I started to read that book, from the very first page, it occurred to me that this is it. This is what I was searching for. And the next day, next night, that night, I got so engrossed in reading that book and I was so enamored by it that I just kept on reading until I fell asleep. And next morning when I woke up, first thing I did is just pick up the book and start reading it. And then that night I had a beautiful dream. I saw Srila Prabhupada. I saw Srila Prabhupada sitting on a throne. Those days I didn't know what a Vyasasana was. Because in India the sadhus don't sit on an elaborate seat. They just sit on simple seats or tiger skin or deer skin. But here Prabhupada was sitting on something like that, looked like a throne. And there was a brilliant light around Srila Prabhupada, as if the light was coming out from him. And just the sight of Srila Prabhupada just made me realize that this is my spiritual life. And that feeling was so overwhelming that I offered my obeisances and surrendered myself to him right there. Then I went to the temple, Calcutta temple, and to find out where Prabhupada was. And I was told that Srila Prabhupada was in America at that time. So I thought, okay, I'll wait till Srila Prabhupada came back. And when Srila Prabhupada came back to India, I would surrender myself to him. So that's how my actual spiritual life began. By Krishna's mercy, I found Srila Prabhupada. Or as I felt at that time, or as a kind of in a rather disappointed mood when a thought that lit my spiritual karma. If at all I have a spiritual master, let him come and pick me up. And it happened, like, yes, Prabhupada came and picked me up. And when I met Srila Prabhupada also, it was very wonderful. Like, Srila Prabhupada literally picked me up. Like, he allowed me to stay with him. Those days Srila Prabhupada had about 10,000 disciples, and even to get Prabhupada's darshan was quite rare, quite difficult. But by Krishna's mercy, I had the good fortune of being with Srila Prabhupada. And anyway, that's how it all started. And the point that I was trying to make is, because I knew what the West was like, like, I was very, very afraid to come to the West. And 77, 78, and for those 2 years, there had been many invitations to come to the West, and but I was reluctant. I didn't want, I was afraid actually, because I knew how strong Maya is. But then in 79 there was the opening of Srila Prabhupada's palace in Vrindavan. So I had to, there was devotees were insisting that I had to come. So that's how I came to America for the first time. And straight away we went to New Vrindavan. And then from New Vrindavan I went to New York, and after a few days in New York, the GBC of New York those days was a very dear god brother of mine, Adi Keshav Prabhu. And Adi Keshav was coming to Boston, was his zone also, so he told me that he was coming to Boston and he wanted me to come to Boston. So we drove together from New York to Boston, and all those memories were coming back when I was standing in front of the ATs today. And it just occurred to me that this deity, Radha Gopi Vallabhya, actually I joined in Mayapur. So the deities in Mayapur was Radha Madhav. So Radha Madhav, Radha Gopi Vallabh and Radha Damodar, who are in Gita Nagari now, these three deities came from the same time. All these three sets of deities were made. And I was I completely forgot about it. While standing in front of the deities, it just occurred to me that these are very special deities. Prabhupada himself actually arranged these deities. And Radha Damodar used to travel all over America in Radha Damodar bus party. They used to have quite a few buses, Greyhound buses. They used to buy them, and groups of devotees used to travel. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj used to lead those buses, along with Vishnujan Maharaj. And they used to make those days hundreds of devotees. There was a saying that Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Vishnujan Maharaj would sit in the bus, and the young boys would be brought into the bus, and from one side of the bus. And when they would come out of the other side of the bus, they all shared tail and wearing the African robes. And also, this time I came to Boston mainly for a program in MIT. And I was remembering that the first program I did in America outside the temple was also in MIT. When I came to Boston, Adi Keshav told me that there is a program in the evening in Boston. invited, so he asked me to go and give the class. So I did that. It was quite an experience, very interesting experience actually. And preaching to the American youth in those days was very exciting and anyway, I'm very happy to be here today. Very happy to come to a situation when I was remembering those early days. And past is always so beautiful, but at the same time we are told not to dwell in the past. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote, "Forget the past that sleeps, never future dream at all. Live with the time that are with thee, and progress thee shall call." So neither do we dream about, neither do we dwell in the past, nor do we dream about the future. Our business is to deal with the present, because that's what is reality. What are we going to do now? Why are we here? Why are we all here? We are here with, naturally with some specific purpose. Why do we come to ISKCON Temple? ISKCON temples are a place where we can understand about the spiritual reality. Just as one goes to school or colleges or universities to learn something, we come to ISKCON Temple also to learn something. It's actually, ISKCON is actually an educational institution. It's a very special educational institution. This is a place where one can learn about the spiritual reality. Material reality, material nature we can perceive. Everybody can see, everybody can experience it. And there are so many institutions that actually give information about different material subject matters. But beyond this material nature, there is another reality. Like again, we go back to MIT. You know when Prabhupada went to MIT, what was Prabhupada's first question? The authorities at MIT, they're taking Prabhupada, the important members of MIT was taking Srila Prabhupada around, showing him different departments. Then after that, Srila Prabhupada just asked them, "Where is the department where we can study the difference between a dead body and a living body? Isn't that an important subject? What's the difference between a dead body and a living body?" Now that subject, which is actually most important subject for all of us to consider, there is no faculty that actually undertakes that branch of knowledge. What's the difference between a dead body and a living body? What's the difference between dead matter and a living being? Is it important to study that subject? It's important to delve into that point. Now if you want to, then ISKCON is the institution where you can study that subject. We are living in a world of matter. Matter by nature is dead. Dead matter, we say. Dead matter. Now, dead matter, matter is dead, means matter by nature is inert. Now, although our bodies are also made of matter, hence dead, how come these bodies are alive? Is it a pertinent question or pertinent topic to delve into? What keeps us alive? What makes us alive? What makes our bodies alive? The presence of a soul. Now, is it important to understand what the soul is? What's the nature of the soul? How many of you are studying? How many of you are reading Bhagavad Gita? Or read Bhagavad Gita? Please raise your hands. Now, in Bhagavad Gita was the first point that Krishna makes. When Arjuna refused to fight and Krishna started to instruct Arjuna, was the first point that Krishna made. Krishna reminded Arjuna that there was never a time when we were not there, and there will never be a time when we will not be here. Our bodies may perish, but we will continue to exist. Are you in agreement with me? Krishna said that there was never a time, natvevaham jatu nasam, natvam neme janadipa, na bhuya na bhavishyama, sarve vayam atapavam. Sarve vayam atapavam. All these kings were standing in front of you. All these soldiers and warriors who are here to fight the battle. And you and I, there was never a time when we did not exist, and nor will ever be a time when we will not exist. What may perish is the body. The body may die. But what is this body? Krishna pointed out, look at the body. The body changed. Dehinashmin jatha dehi, komaram yovanam jara, tatha dehantara praptir dhirastatra namuyati. We can all relate to that. There was a time when we had a baby body. Komaram. Then this body grew to Jovana. From boyhood or girlhood, it became youth. And then, eventually, all the bodies again will become old. So although the body is changing, but we do not change. I when I was 5, I when I was 15, I that I am today is the same I, although the 5-year-old body was completely different and it's not there anymore. The 15-year-old body is not there anymore. So in spite of the change of the body, I am not changing. So Krishna is drawing a very simple conclusion there. Tatha dehantara prapti. In spite of the change of the body, we do not change. Therefore, even if the body is left behind, still we will continue to exist. And we will transmigrate from this body to another body. Who will do that? Who will transmigrate? The soul. So we can see how systematically Krishna is actually establishing this very simple principle. Now it's only a matter of becoming exposed to the right understanding. The problem in today's education system is that there is no consideration of this, the presence of the soul. There's no consideration of our actual identity. Everyone is simply caught up with his physical identity, bodily consciousness. But they do not consider that this body is not the actual self. I am not this body. I am something beyond this body who makes this body alive. And when I am gone, then the body dies. What is the meaning of death? Who dies? The body dies. When? When the soul leaves the body. For example, now I am talking, I am here, you are thinking that, oh, he is here, he is talking. If I drop dead, now my body will be lying here, but you will say he is gone. Isn't it? Now who is that he that is gone? The body is lying here. So who is that he? Naturally, the one who kept this body alive. And so what's my relationship with my body? Again, Krishna is making that point. Another very sublime revelation. Krishna is saying, this body is just like a dress. Just as we wear dress, we wear clothes. And when the clothes become dirty or worn out, we change. That's all. Jirnani vasamshi jatha vihaya navani grinhati narokarani tatha sharirani vihaya jirnani annani samjati navani jirnani vasamshi vasham, vash means dress. When the dresses become old and worn out, jatha bihaya, just as we discard, give up. And navani grinhati narovaparani, and one puts on a new dress. Similarly, when this body becomes worn out, then we give up that old body and put on a new body. So this is the relationship between us and our bodies. Now, do we find this information or this understanding in any school or college or university? No. Now, is it important to master the subject? Important to get the wisdom, get the knowledge? Where can you get it? That's where Prabhupada created the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So when you come to ISKCON, why do you come here? Or why should you come here? Not that we don't want you to come here. We very much want you to come here. We want you to come and be here all the time. Bring all your friends and relatives. Bring everybody here. But for one purpose, and the purpose is to receive this wisdom of the spiritual ideas. ISKCON is the institution where this subject matter is very systematically and very scientifically taught. So when I come here, I feel that it is my responsibility to impart this knowledge unto you. And at the same time, I expect that you also will be receptive to receive this knowledge. When you receive this knowledge, when you develop this understanding, what do you gain? What do you benefit? You know what's the first benefit? Well, the prime benefit out of that is we achieve immortality. Doesn't everybody want to become immortal? So many scientists are making so many research, undertaking so many researches to bring out the elixir or medicine that will make everybody immortal. But immortality is so easy to achieve. If we just recognize who we are, we immediately become immortal. That means we recognize that our actual identity is spiritual. And the soul, oh, it seems that the sound is not good enough, or immortality is very easy to achieve as soon as we recognize our actual identity. Who I am? Who are you? So again, let's go back to that point. Are we this body? Yes or no? The answer is no. Although we are identifying ourselves with the body, but actually we are spirit souls. Now the spirit souls never die. Isn't it a very simple equation? I am a spirit soul. Spirit souls never die. Therefore, what will be the equation? I will never die. Sounds convincing? Yes, that's what we are. And that's one of the first aphorisms or first instructions of the Vedas. Shrinam tu vishay amritasya putra. Listen, O the children of immortality. You are immortal. Who dies? The body dies. Who is this body? Just an external covering. I mean, if we can just get this simple understanding, then life becomes so easy to deal with. Life actually becomes so beautiful. Then it becomes a journey towards immortality. Our problem is that unfortunately we are just identifying ourselves with this body. That is our problem. Just identifying ourselves with the body, and therefore we are not concerned or we are not aware of our actual identity, and that is the mistake. That's why it is called the world of ignorance, the state of ignorance. Are you all familiar with the concept? Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitangena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya. So what is this Ajnana? What is this ignorance? The ignorance is to identify ourselves with matter, this body. We are spiritual and this body is material. But unfortunately, we are identifying ourselves with the body. Therefore, that is the mistake, that's the ignorance. And what kind of ignorance is this? Timirandhasya, deep, dark ignorance. But then I come across a personality who imparts the actual knowledge to us. And who is that personality? Who gives us that transcendental knowledge? Tasmai Shri Gurave. He is the spiritual master. The spiritual master opens our darkened eyes with transcendental knowledge, as if it's a kind of an ointment. Jnana Anjana. Anjana means a mascara that you put on your eyes, and that is meant, that's supposed to enhance the power of your vision. And so it is a transcendental mascara that you put on your eyes, the spiritual master puts on your eyes, and your eyes develop an inconceivable ability to perceive the spiritual reality. We may not see that reality with our mundane eyes, but with the transcendental knowledge we can see it. when our eyes become, when our blindness is cured with this wonderful medicine of transcendental knowledge, then we begin to see another dimension altogether, and that is the spiritual dimension. So illusion or ignorance is to identify ourselves with this body and the surrounding world made of matter, which is perceived through the senses of this body. And the spiritual knowledge is transporting us from this dimension to another dimension. And that is called Krishna consciousness. Now we are in illusion, simply because we are perceiving another reality which is not a real reality, but it's a reflection through our senses. But beyond that world of sense perception, there is the actual reality. And that reality is what, where we belong to. And as I was pointing out, that the first reward of receiving this knowledge is immortality. And you know what are the side effects of that knowledge? The side effects are total cessation of suffering and appearance of auspiciousness. In one hand, all the sufferings disappear and all auspiciousness appear. It has been described like the seed of bhakti lata, when it is planted in the ground or field of our heart and properly cultivated, then what happens? The seed sprouts into a seedling. So how does the seedling appear? How does the seedling grow? It appears with two preliminary leaves. So what are those two leaves of bhakti lata? Kleshagni and Shubhada. Kleshagni means total disappearance of klesha, sufferings. So as soon as you develop your spiritual life, as soon as you start to cultivate your devotional kripa, you know that expression, Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. By the mercy of Guru and Krishna, one gets the Bhakti Lata Bij, the seed of Bhakti Lata, the devotional kripa. The devotion has been analyzed as if it's developing like a creeper. So we get the seed. How do we get the seed? By the mercy of Guru and Krishna. Guru, Krishna, Prasadipa. And when you get the seed, what do we need? What we are supposed to do? Throw it away? No. A seed, especially when we have such a rare seed, when we got such a rare seed, we must cultivate it. What is the field where this seed is cultivated? It is cultivated in the field of our heart. We plant it in our hearts. So, and when you start to cultivate, how do we cultivate? Like, you plant the seed and then what do you have to do? You have to water it. So what is the process of watering? By hearing chanting. You get the seed and then you hear the glory of Krishna and you chant the glory of Krishna. Shravanam Kirtanam. And when it is watered properly, then gradually the seed will sprout into a seedling. Now as it appears into a seedling, then two leaves come out. Those two leaves are Kleshagni. Kleshagni means total cessation of Klesha, suffering. One leaf is Kleshagni and the other leaf is Shubhada. Shubha means auspiciousness. And Dal means giver. It gives all auspiciousness. It brings all auspiciousness. From our heart, all the sufferings disappear and all auspiciousness inundates our heart. So that is the initial benefit. That means no more anxiety, no more suffering, no more stress, no more difficulties. The result is one automatically becomes blissful. How do the devotees look like? Do they look like a morose bunch? Depressed lot? No. You'll notice the devotees are so blissful. Even if they go in disguise, you'll be able to recognize them. Like devotees, because they have accepted Krishna consciousness, their whole countenance reflect that. They look very blissful, which is not... although they try to make themselves look unattractive. In the age of Kali, the most important factor of one's beauty is hair. And devotees just get rid of it. So when the most important factor of your beauty is gone, then how do you look like? But still, of course nowadays it's becoming a fad, it's becoming a fashion to wear shaved head. And I used to notice people started to shave their head and then eventually they started to also keep a sikha. So making progress, no doubt about that. So even though the devotees don't really want to appear to be attractive, but they look so attractive because they glow with the spiritual bliss that emanates from within. And this becomes an undeniable factor. So that is how, so this process of Krishna consciousness proves itself, its efficacy and effectivity. It works. It works. And you know what is the ultimate proof of the authenticity of this process? The ultimate proof is how a devotee leaves his body. We are experiencing it. Gradually we are seeing that how some devotees are leaving their bodies. And literally they leave their body with a big smile in their face, which is, you know, you can't fake it at that time. So this is the proof of the effectivity of this process. And I've seen some very simple individuals, like very, very simple person, not really outstanding in his achievement or her achievement, not a big scholar, never been recognized as an outstanding devotee through her or his performance. But at the time of death we see like how boldly they face that situation. Often I think of one lady. In that respect, she was, as I said, like a very simple, unassuming personality. She got cancer, and the way she went through the whole situation with such boldness, so advanced spiritually. She was not very educated, she was not very learned, but she accepted the process wholeheartedly, with full faith, and she experienced it. And you know how she left her body? She not only had the bead bag in her hand, she was chanting. Right at that time when she was leaving her body, she just lifted her bead, kept it on her head, she left her body. How could one do such a thing at that time? Not only chanting, but with such conviction, she brings the bead onto her head. So this is the proof of the authenticity of this process. This is the proof that one does achieve immortality. And what happens at the time of death? What if Krishna comes and says, come, let's go? Is it death or entering into the spiritual sky? So for a devotee, death is not the end of everything. For a devotee, death is an entrance to another reality, the spiritual reality. Do you recall the incidents with Dhruva Maharaj? When Dhruva Maharaj was leaving this planet, the chariot came from the spiritual sky. The two associates of the Lord, Nanda and Sunanda, came to take Dhruva Maharaj back to the spiritual sky. So they came, and then Dhruva Maharaj was informed that they came to take him. So Dhruva Maharaj took a bath and bade farewell, goodbye to all the central personalities there. And then he circumambulated that celestial chariot three times. And when Dhruva Maharaj was about to step onto the chariot, he saw the death personified was standing there. Not standing, kneeling there with folded hands, asking for Dhruva Maharaj to bless him. And what did Dhruva Maharaj do? He stepped on his head to climb onto the chariot. So that is how death comes to a devotee, with folded hands begging for his mercy. Yes, death comes to a devotee also, but in a totally different way. In this way, death actually clears the pathway to immortality. So this is the most wonderful gift of Srila Prabhupada to us, in the form of this awareness, in the form of this knowledge and wisdom. Chakshurun Militam Jena. In this way Srila Prabhupada opened our darkened eyes with transcendental knowledge. And if we receive this knowledge properly by following the process that Srila Prabhupada gave, the desired result is bound to be there. Thank you very much. I'm just leaving about 15 minutes before the arati for questions, if you have. Does anybody? Yes?
If it was perfect in the spiritual world, why did you decide to come here?
Okay, if the spiritual world is so perfect, then why do you decide to come here? Prabhupada answers this question by saying that the cause of our fall down to this material nature is in the spiritual concept of time. You see, therefore, unless and until you go go there, we can't, we won't be able to figure out a way we can. But at least we know that we are stuck here. So let's just get out of here and go back. But there is another analogy can be given, you know, like this has been explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associate, Jagadananda Pandit. And he's saying that when a living entity turns his consciousness away from Krishna, then he encounters Krishna's inferior energy, Maya. You see, we are from Krishna's superior energy, spiritual energy, and we are coming in contact with Krishna's external energy because our consciousness is minute, just like a ray of light. One ray can be pointed into how many directions? Just in one direction. So it is either towards Krishna or away from Krishna. So away from Krishna means Krishna's external energy. And Krishna's external energy is inferior and we are coming from Krishna's superior energy. So when a superior comes across an inferior, what is the natural outcome, natural tendency? A superior wants to dominate, lord over, right? Exploit. So we develop a tendency to exploit this material nature, lord over this material. Right. But actually our situation is that of a servant. We are servants of Krishna. That's our actual position, constitutional position. But here we are trying to lord over. So this is a shift of our identity, a mistaken identity, which is called false ego. So this is how we get the first covering of false ego, the covering of mistaken identity. Then we get the second covering of intelligence and we start to plan how we are going to exploit this material nature. And then through mind, our consciousness constantly flows towards the material direction. So in this way, through mind, intelligence and false ego, we develop a subtle body. Then according to the subtle body, nature gives us a gross body. So this is how through this gross body and subtle body, we get stuck in the material nature, identifying that this is our actual identity. So that is the cause, you see, like just somehow we turn our face away from Krishna. And it all happened. Anyway, now that it happened, what to do? The cause of our material entanglement is because of our looking away from Krishna. So now how should we rectify that? Look towards Krishna. Right? That's why it's called Krishna consciousness. Where are you going to project your consciousness? Project it towards Krishna, then you'll become free from material entanglement. How we fail here doesn't really matter. What really matters is how we then get out of here. And this is the way. Right. Any other question? Yes.
Why Shiva, Ganesha and other gods, they have been considered as demigods in ISKCON? You had been with Sri Prabhupada. Had he ever told about these things?
Many times.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, very good point. Demigods means they are identified as godly, but they are not actually the supreme personality of Godhead. They are powerful individuals. Actually, the Sanskrit expression for that is devas or devatas. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. Krishna is Bhagavan. But as you say, Ganesh, who is Ganesh?
Krishna.
Ganesh is Deva. Right? Who who is Lord Shiva?
Deva.
Mahadev. Mahadev. He is a Deva, but greatest of all the Devas. And so forth. Like, who is Durga? Who is Kali? Who is Saraswati? Who is Surya? Who is Chandra? Who is Ganesha? Are they identified as Bhagavan? Or Chandra Dev, Indra Dev, Varun Dev? Right? So that understanding has to be clear. Now, who are these Devas and Devis? Devas and Devis are the controllers of different affairs of the material nature. Right? Who is Varun? He is controlling
water.
The controller of the water department is Varun. Who is Pavan? The controller of
wind.
Who is Agni?
Fire.
Controller of fire. So they are all, you see, who is Saraswati? The controller of education department.
Lakshmi is the controller of money.
Lakshmi, the finance department. So these are different heads of but Krishna is not a Deva. Lord Shiva is Mahadev. But Krishna is Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. So there is a difference between Bhagavan and Devas and Devis. So that's why unfortunate thing is that in English all of them have been lumped into one expression, God. And that's why a misconception has developed that Hinduism is a polytheistic religion. But actually it is not. Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Ekam Eva Adityam. Is one without the second. God, Parameshwar, Param means Supreme. Can Supreme be more than one? Supreme is one. One without a second. Ekam eva adityam is one without a second. So that is Krishna. Now, he expands himself into swamsas, his own expansions. He himself becomes himself again in another form, another way. Like Krishna becomes Balaram, Lord Ramchandra, Vasudev, Shankarshan, Pradumna, Aniruddha, Vishnu, Narayan. They are all Krishna himself expanding. This point has been exemplified in Brahma Samhita. As just as Dipachi Deva Hidasantaram of Bhupetya, Dipayate Vibrita Hitu Samana Dharma. Just as one lamp lights other lamps. When the lamps are lit, they give out the same amount of light and heat. They are the same. All the lamps. So similarly, the expansions of Krishna, the incarnations of Krishna are like that. But the thing is that he is the original lamp that he lit the other lamps. But that is not the case with Devas and Devis. They are vibhinna answers. They are Krishna's expansions of two types, Swamsa, and these are Swamsas are the incarnations, and vibhinna answers. His expansions in his parts and parcels. So these are not ISKCON's concept. These are the reality. Only ISKCON is presenting it just as they are. Whereas in the name of Hinduism, what's going on is all kinds of hodgepodge concepts. No understanding. And they are thinking, oh, all ekai, sabchal ekai. Everything is one. The thing is that the reality is that they don't have any understanding. Because of their lack of understanding, because of their ignorance, they're just presenting things in a certain way, which is totally misleading. Now Prabhupada is actually giving us the real knowledge, the real understanding, and Prabhupada is not just concocting something on his own. Prabhupada is giving us the scriptural understanding. Prabhupada is presenting from Bhagavad Gita. Now see what Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita. Janti deva vrata devan pitrin janti pritri vrata. Those who are worshippers of deva, they will go to the devas. Those who are worshippers of forefathers, they will go to the forefathers. Those who are worshippers of hobgoblins and ghosts, they will go to the ghost loka. But janti machajinom pimam. Those who worship me, they will come to me. And that is Krishna's statement. Krishna is saying that those who want some immediate benefit, some insignificant temporary benefit, they worship the demigods. But those who want a permanent result, they surrender. And ultimately in Bhagavad Gita, what is Krishna saying? Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam braj. Give up your so-called dharmas, all these duties and responsibilities, and just surrender unto me. So Krishna is boldly declaring that surrender unto me, no compromise. And that's what Prabhupada is teaching. Alright?
But in Mahabharata, Krishna and Arjuna, they worshipped Lord Shiva, and also according to the Vedas, the Panchayatan Puja.
What's that?
Panchayatan Puja.
Okay, I don't know about that. But let's go back to that, worshipping Lord Shiva.
Yeah, and...
I got your point.
And Vishnu...
I got your point, let me, because we don't have enough time.
Yeah.
So... You see, Krishna worshipped also Sudama Vipra. When Sudama Vipra came to Krishna's palace, he washed his feet and worshipped him. Now does it mean that Sudama Vipra became superior to Krishna? Or did Sudama Vipra think that he became superior to Krishna? Rather, he always remains submissive to Krishna. So sometimes Krishna may worship his devotee, but that doesn't mean that the devotee becomes superior to him. Lord Shiva is a devotee of Krishna. Vaishnavanam jatha sambhu. Alright? Hare Krishna. Gaur Premanande Hare.